Welcome to the PPC Show. I'm your host, Paul Wicker, and today we are lucky enough to sit down with Garrett Marigut. He is a really smart guy in B2B SaaS marketing, an agency guy from Directive. So we're going to hop right in, Garrett, and just ask you a little bit about the agency and your role there. You've been there for a while. So were you part of the founding, or do you run Directive these days? What's up?
Yeah, I'm the CEO here at Directive. I started the agency about 6 years ago. I was essentially slinging social media calendars on Fiverr for about $5, kind of figured out how Fiverr's algorithms worked, and kind of grew on Fiverr and started selling a bunch of different stuff on Fiverr. And then someone asked me to do SEO, and I was like, never done it before, but I can figure it out.
Yeah, wait, I want to know about this slinging social media calendars. What does that mean? What were you actually selling on Fiverr?
Yeah. So I just built like an Excel sheet. I think it was maybe before. No, it was Google Sheet. I can't remember. It was Excel or Google Sheet with tabs. And it just like had a base calendar that people could follow that had like content ideas for each day. And I would just sell it for $5. I'd just Command F, change their name, and sell it to them. And I could, you know, I was like pretty much number one gig on Fiverr in marketing for a while. And I was just having fun with it. My buddy, like, I bet my buddy I can make $1,000 a month, you know, not really doing anything. And he was like, no, you couldn't. And so then I just did it for fun. I was always just kind of hustling and figuring stuff out. And then, someone asked me if I could do SEO for him. And I said, yeah, I'll go for it. And so I read everything Moz had written on SEO. It took about 2 weeks. I think I literally went through their blog archive, like all the way like back to like, I think 2000 and something, like mid to something in 2000s, and read hundreds of posts, and then just took notes the whole time and like would practice what I was reading on the website. So I had a little motto called Learn, Engage, Create. And the idea was if I could learn something new every day and engage with it by actually implementing it, I could create more value for myself and for the customer. And so I just kind of did that.
Well, let me ask you, if I'm sure you follow me on Twitter because I'm a really important guy.
Very, very popular. Blue check mark, everything. Yeah.
Check it every morning. And I was just saying, you know, it might be time for me to learn SEO. So like I kind of dabble in, you know, we hired like SEO firms a few times throughout AdShade's history. And, you know, when we get a new like company, I get in the weeds and I like learn enough that I can talk to them smart and intelligently. And then they tell me some things. And I spend some time in SEMrush or iEspionage or whatever tool they use. But I've never really taken the time to learn it. So how long do you think, if I wanted to like wrap my head around SEO tactics and measurement and key metrics, how long do you think I need to dedicate to it?
Well, good news for you. We launched something called The Institute. It's our own SaaS product. It teaches you how to do SEO.
This was not a setup, by the way. This was.
Oh, no, it feels like it, Paul.
I tweeted this like 2 weeks ago or a week ago saying, like, I think it's time I need to learn SEO because I can't talk intelligently about it. Okay, so you just set up a product for me. Perfect.
So we have something called The Institute. It teaches SEO, PPC, CRO, and analytics. Kind of what we do at Directive. We just took everything we like. So if you want to learn how to do like keyword research the right way, Paul, check out that lesson. It's hours long, video, walkthroughs, markup, all the templates. And it's not like informational. It's we would literally be like copyadstage.com, paste it into SEMrush. And we're going to actually teach you how to do it with your life. So it's built for in-house marketers who genuinely want to like know what the hell they're actually talking about when they're working with an agency, which sounds like exactly where you're coming from. Like when you're working with a vendor, you're like, look, I don't want to be the best SEO, but I want to know if someone's sliding something past me or if they're taking me for a loop. The course would be phenomenal for you. And I think you'd really enjoy it. It's only $39. So
I'll help you make your next $1,000 with your friend on the side bet. Although I guess you're making more now.
Maybe.
Yeah, you know, the other thing that I found is after you sign an SEO agency, so if you're running a brand and you're like, oh, someone's always complaining, like, oh, our SEO stinks, you know, whatever that means. We don't rank for these keywords, and or organic's down. There's a big algo change in January that whacked us, and that was basically why I was digging back in. Because when you sign the agency, you're like, you're in Google Search Console, you're really like into it, and you're like, okay, and then, you know, you hire the agency, and then they go do some stuff. Maybe they send you reports and you have some check-ins, but you kind of check out because you're like, all right, I paid someone to do this for me. But then when changes happen, you can't always just like, we don't pay them enough to just pick up the phone and say like, hey, tell me about the algo change in January. They kind of already did the stuff and now moved on. So we can go through the dance again where I go get another agency or pay them more money. But I'm like, I don't think it's that complicated, like, you know, for me to at least get a lay of the land. So, all right, I think you got my $39.
Yeah, no, you'll love it. It's a really good course. Anyone listening will enjoy it. I think the key for SEO, really in 2020, is that you have to get away from the idea that your website's important. Craziest concept. And so all of performance marketing, search marketing, SEO, PPC content, all these things, if you can get rid of the idea that I have to own it on my website and start to say, how do I want my brand to be discovered? In other words, so if I'm working at AdAge, right, and I'm saying, okay, how am I going to grow AdStage, apologies. My number one thought is not going to be how do I make AdStage rank, but my question is what conversations are going on online at the bottom of the funnel when it comes to agency reporting, like you got Report Garden, right? So you have in the agency reporting space, you have Report Garden, you have TapClicks, you have all these players, right? And so the question isn't how do I have my website show up? It's how am I positioned to be discovered in every opportunity when there's purchase intent? And so when you change your perspective and you look at purchase intent and you find this right in Google Ads and mining a search term report, you start to say, okay, agency data pipeline management, agency ETL, data ETL management. You start to look at all these Report Garden, like instead of doing competitor campaigns, you start layering alternative, right? So you do Report Garden alternative, you do Report Garden reviews, you do TapClicks alternative, TapClicks reviews, Domo alternative, Sisense alternative, et cetera. Whatever agencies you're doing, GDS, right? Google Data Studio alternative. But you start to ask yourself, okay, when people are looking for a BI solution that's really for marketing, or they're looking for something that can do their data reporting, manage their data pipeline, these things, am I being discovered? Because when you change it from is my website ranking to am I being discovered, you start to focus on G2, Capterra, software advice, and you start to see things in a different light, right? Then you put all of those channels in a CAC TV model, and next thing you know, you're just reallocating budget based on the channels that are driving MQLs or ops or deals, whatever you're tracking and measuring, and now all of a sudden, you're unlocking pipeline and this growth becomes exponential. And when you get that right, everything's easy.
So you banged out a few of the software comparison sites. How about the Reddits of the world or the Quora's of the world? Do you see those as like viable channels?
Well, yeah. So you got your guys' old guy, right, who went over to Quora and now does a lot of their thought leadership, who's at AdStage.
JD
yeah.
Prater. Shout out, yep. JD.
So there's JD, right, and he's doing Quora. Now, what we're finding on Quora, unfortunately, is they have some of the issues that LinkedIn has. So, for example, one of the easiest way to get really high level of quality impressions on your firmographic is actually using text ads and spotlight ads on LinkedIn, and you do it on a CPC model. So by doing it on a CPC model, you're essentially daring their platform to drive engagement, and it can't. And so you get really, really cheap CPMs, even cheaper than CPM bidding. Now, Quora has the same problem. So every time you search for the Directive Institute, like digital, like anything we want to show up for, so digital marketing courses, learning digital marketing, anything like that on Quora, we show up, but we can't get clicks. So one of the issues is you never want to optimize for clicks if you already have impression share, because usually you want to de-optimize for clicks. In other words, you want to increase your ideal customer persona saying, oh my God, finally, and you want the wrong person to go, oh, not for me, right? And that's the way you maintain efficiency and spend. Now, the problem with Quora is we can't get people to say, oh my God, that's me, and click, because they intrinsically, the way the ad unit is developed is meant to be so unobtrusive that it doesn't work. You see, Google Ads doesn't have this problem. You can run the crappiest ad in the world and you're always gonna get clicks, right? Once you get your average position right, clicks aren't a problem. Now, conversions, all that may be an issue. Quora, we can't even get clicks. So to answer your question, struggle with clicks, and then Reddit right now is a really high CPA for us on our SaaS product. It's only $39 a month, so we're getting a fair, I feel like you can get a lot better reading on platforms with a lower purchase price, self-activated kind of product. So that's what we're seeing.
And then, so let's talk about SaaS a little bit. So you have this kind of $39 product, like education product.
Yep.
From as a business owner, right? You own the agency, you do services, I assume you charge fees. How are you packaging up your business to take advantage of like reoccurring SaaS revenue, which it sounds like you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, everything we do here is mostly recurring. There are some projects. Let's say someone like yourself, right? You kind of communicate, look, I don't want to spend a ton on an agency. I can kind of figure out what I'm doing, but at the same time, it'd be nice to have an annual strategy in place. It'd be nice to have like quarterly targets. It'd be nice to have a roadmap. We might come in with someone like that and say, okay, here's what we would do, and we'll do a project. But for the most part, all our engagements are a year, 12-month engagement with primarily software companies. Yeah, helping them essentially with MQLs and ops and deals.
And do you? And we'll talk more about that in a sec, but I was curious if you were building this like separate business around like subscription revenue with like education.
We are, for that reason. Couple reasons. Number one, I want to practice what I preach. So like right now I'm trying to help all of our SaaS clients in Q2. One of my goals is to help them get into a better CAC LTV modeling for search. See, most of them aren't doing this. In all honesty, like almost every SaaS company we've worked with really struggles with growth ops. They struggle with their HubSpot or Marketo to Salesforce integration. Mm-hmm. You know, HubSpot's calling a lead this, Salesforce calls it that, and you know the game. It's just a nightmare. It's literally what you guys are trying. One of your, probably the biggest drawbacks of AdStage is people actually having a marketing and sales ops infrastructure that can leverage it. That's the problem with Bizible when I used it. That's the problem with a lot of these places, right? Now, our clients struggle with that. One of the things, though, that they do know is they know how many proposals they gave, how much revenue they generated, and how much they spent. So you can still use all that to build a CAC LTV model. So right. One of the cool things about having our own product is we get to roll this out and say, okay, what's our CAC LTV on these channels? What are we learning from this? And so it's kind of a way for us to practice what we preach and actually test it. And I don't think enough agencies do that. You know what I mean? There's a lot of agencies out there that love to spew their bullshit and then have actually don't eat it. Like they say you need to rank your website and you search for them, they don't rank for anything. They say you need to do this, you need to build links, and they've never built a link for themselves. It's like, to me, it's kind of backwards. So for us, you know, I really do want to be a leader in what I'm selling and not be full of it.
Yeah, that is a really good point with SEO agencies. It's like, you say, how well did you rank for SEO agency? But for like paid search, paid social, it's pretty easy to tell people what to do without having done it. It's easier in B2C or just anything consumer, right? Because I know a lot of agencies that do just sell e-commerce products because of all these, like, how easy it is now to spin up a brand and sell e-commerce on Amazon and Google, Facebook, Instagram. But it's hard in B2B SaaS. So you guys took the extra step to just build a SaaS product, essentially, that you can go sell to test the tactics. I like it. I really like it.
Yeah, it just helps. I mean, I think if I was hiring an agency, I'd want to, number one, just know, you know, who have they done this for, and are those companies I know about, respect, or I deem similar to myself? I think that's important in the valuation stage. And I also want to know, like, I think it's cool to think that, oh, they can actually do it for themselves. Like, they're actually able to acquire new users for themselves. Makes me feel more confident that they can do it for me.
Yeah, it's really interesting because you know, obviously, everybody has logos, so you talk to an agency and they're like, oh, we have this customer, that customer. But you never really know how much, like, how successful that relationship is. You don't know, you know, if you have Oracle, you know, how much did you actually grow Oracle's business versus you're just kind of doing what
you had this one business unit that you did a logo for back in 2002 at your old agency and you threw it on it. No, I mean, that's the truth. That's what most of them are doing, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I worked at Kenshu, and at the time, it was a big battle between Kenshu, Marin, DoubleClick, like when they first got acquired. Quizio more in the local space. And we all somehow had the same logos on our website because at some point we all did business with like the Fortune 500. And like, you know, once you do it once, it's going on your website.
It's going on the website, baby. You got to get another one.
Waiting for them to tell you to take it down because, hey, you know, we canceled 2 years ago. I noticed, you know, Apple was still on your website.
No, and we actually do like web.com, who acquired Quizio.
Oh, nice.
We worked with them in the past and we're looking to work with them again in the future. So, they're a great company.
Yeah, they are actually. Mark, you know, the CEO over there, who recently, I think he left to go start his next thing now that, you know, he made his millions selling it to web.com, is a great guy, obviously really well known in the PPC space. And then, yeah, I know a bunch of folks that use them. Back when I was at Kenshu, we competed with Quizio for some of the like media companies that were trying to do high scale stuff. It was always ironic, though, they couldn't do their own paid because they only know how to do like kind of cookie cutter stuff for small businesses.
We talked with Quizio to do their PPC. So we work with a lot of software companies. Yeah, that's really all we do.
So let's talk about MQLs, SQLs, or maybe you didn't, but you started talking about Salesforce. And I heard MQL, SQL. And HubSpot, and like, how do you get everything aligned and then attributed back to paid? So, so both with our own advertising, you know, we run paid ads on, I don't know, say 10 different channels, right? Like the big ones, Google, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Bing, but then also smaller ones like Quora. We try things like Snap and Reddit because we're in the business. So even if it's a crap channel, we're going to try it. So we've tried some crazy display stuff.
I love it.
And we use a lot of UTMs to try to attribute that all back, capturing Google Analytics, and then pass all that through to Salesforce. So in Salesforce, when we run an ops report, we can see, you know, UTM campaign, medium source. And then the dream is, okay, well, then I could bring that back into AdStage and so then see, oh, here's my paid and how much it generated in Salesforce. Our problem is we don't get enough volume to really tell me whether Reddit works or what, you know, Quora works. And even in some cases, like bigger networks that have volume, like, you know, we're still a pretty small startup with a pretty small budget at the end of the day. And we don't sign up like 5,000 customers a month because we're not in B2C. So how do you handle this scarcity of data problem you have that I'm sure you see in B2B?
Yeah. I mean, y'all are still like doing decent volume, right? Like, my business, I spend pretty heavily on all my channels because I do really believe in what I sell. And I manage digital here at Directive. So one of the cool parts is I get to be CEO and still do what I love to do, which is manage digital, right? And so within that, we are onboarding, you know, trying to onboard less than 10 customers, really right around 8 a month. So we're not doing a high volume. But I still have great data on all my channels. Now, the easiest way I've found to do it, so I've gone through quite a progression. I've started with Bizible, I think, 4 years ago to try to get that really good channel attribution, forecasting, ROI, stuff like that. Bizible is tough because a lot of people actually, like, they miss a lot of the scripts. They don't have, like, 100% accuracy on actually getting the data right, number one.
Right.
Number two, when you try to do a report, it always seems to break. So that was a kind of issue with Bizible at the time. Then I went to Marketo. Marketo, you need a whole company just to run your Marketo for the company right. that you're trying to run the Marketo for. Like, you literally need to... Using Marketo, Marketo, I'll say right now, is the worst product ever invented. It is just a horrific product. So we got off of Marketo and onto HubSpot. HubSpot has been a delight. So if anyone's out there trying to figure out, how do I get marketing ops figured out? The attribution that comes native to HubSpot is actually really, really strong, Paul. So to help you guys get away from having to do that game, I would go essentially market like HubSpot to Salesforce and then set that integration up. And then you can still port lead source over there. And then you can get a full on report of all your channels, ROI, pipeline stages right in HubSpot or send it back with Salesforce. Either way, like, the data is exceptional. The pricing is great. And then the ramp up time and usability, HubSpot's been everything I hoped Marketo would be.
Right. And yeah, not to also be a commercial for HubSpot, but I agree. We use HubSpot for the marketing team, Salesforce for the sales team.
Same here.
And Intercom as our primary like CS.
Same. And I'm using Intercom, to do customer support,
And then we have a software product, so we also use Mixpanel.
I use Mixpanel too.
Okay.
Same stack.
Wow. There's some weird stack alignment. So like that's the best stack that I've figured out. I mean, I've been at Sage for about 5.5 years. So we've tried a lot of tools. That's like where we're at now. And I agree with you. HubSpot is probably the easiest to use. We considered moving off Salesforce, and we still might, to go to HubSpot and use their sales module.
It might be nice. The problem is if you do a lot of sales development, what's going to happen is you're going to get like – pigeonholed by HubSpot because they have a closed ecosystem and they don't like, so you can't use outreach.io or Salesloft or something like that well with HubSpot. And so that's why we've stayed with essentially Salesforce because we can keep that. But the HubSpot's good, man. They're really good at just product adoption and usability for sure.
And it's and full disclosure, they're an investor in AdSage too. So I'm not just saying it for that reason, but I have to disclose it. One of my favorite things to do with HubSpot is, so we do pass through lead data. It does show up in Salesforce. You know, we don't get a ton of conversions, so I can see like, oh, great, we got a conversion from Quora. You know, that would be like, woohoo, we got, and we're really picking on it. I hope JD listens to this so we get yours pick on Quora. Any channel, you know, we cheer when we're like, okay, we see really clear attribution. Of course, for us, we've been running a newsletter for like 5 years. We have a lot of like traffic to our site on content. So almost every time somebody signs up for a trial and then buys, we're like, oh, actually, they've been reading the newsletter for 2 years.
It's direct to organic. Yeah. And you're like,
And paid's in there somewhere.
HubSpot does a great job of that, though, on their paid report. If you set it up right, when you go to the ads in HubSpot, they have an ads view where you can see impressions to contacts, to customers, to leads. It's really, really cool. A lot of people don't know about it. I don't know if you've played with it, but there's a ads report in HubSpot that actually shows all of this, and it's amazing for what you're talking about.
So I haven't seen that. What I tend to do is like look at the actual converted lead or the customer at that point and kind of look at the timeline. So I am going to look at the ads report to understand like
you'll love the ads report because it's doing it gives you that I feel like what you're saying is like I'm missing that bigger view to see it all. The ads report has that really, really pretty good actually.
So I will do that. And I'll also say to folks who have HubSpot, if you haven't done what I'm doing, though, and like go through and just kind of take your time and look at all the touches. And, you know, HubSpot's great about like you can follow the links to like different things that they interacted with. It's like, and then tell that story to the rest of your team. So sometimes on Slack, I'll kind of translate that into like a narrative, like, oh, this person signed up for the newsletter 2 years ago. They opened 15% of them. They, you know, spent this much time on our website looking at this product. They reached out to see us and had two conversations with this person, and then they bought today. And if you do that, it like it really helps the rest of the company understand the sales cycle in B2B sales.
Well, and their value, right? Their role. Like, hey, customer support, you drive sales here. Hey, newsletter team, you drive sales. Like, every one of you has a role to play. No, it's really cool. I like that, Paul.
Yeah. I feel like I'm just really getting free consulting from you right now. This is a good podcast.
No. This is what I do professionally, man. I love to help people and talk about search. So this is awesome.
So let's talk about some other maybe things you've seen for folks doing B2B SaaS. We talked a little bit about conversion data and how there's it can be challenging with like sparse data. But for folks who are doing B2B SaaS, what are some other like kind of top suggestions that you have for them?
Yeah, so what I would try to do on, let's just say on the PPC side, right? So within PPC, one of the things I'm seeing, okay, so one of the biggest struggles in B2B, especially SaaS, is you have this product, but your category isn't perfect. So a lot of times what you find, right, is there's sales software, and that's like Zoho, Salesforce, HubSpot, right? But then within that, there's like sales listening tools, then there's sales forecasting, there's RevOps, there's all these different micro units. The problem is there's only 100 people a month who search for RevOps software, and I'm being generous right now.
Right.
So if you're in RevOps, how do you consistently generate demand, aka leads, which is weird the way they choose it, demand generation really just means lead generation, right? From search. And the truth is to do PPC well, you used to do what's called SKAGs, right? Single keyword ad groups. It was about, I need to control Google, okay? Now what we've seen is when we pull out the different match types out of our MCC and we start to look at everything, the more we control Google, the higher the cost per conversion and the worse returns in 2020. Okay, what's cool here though, is you can take a different approach, right? So what you do now, let's say like Directive, for example, right? We do a lot of enterprise SEO, enterprise PPC. We work with global companies, enterprise companies. We work with mid-market as well. But let's say we want to get enterprise because those are our highest average order values. We see a lot of success with them. We got great case studies. We think we can win them, okay? So we go out there and we do our keyword research. We're like, enterprise SEO agency. Oh, there's 100 people a month that search that. We launch our Google ads. We get two clicks and we're like, well, this isn't a viable channel, right? Because there's not enough people. You have a 2% click-through rate. Then you have, let's say, a 2% conversion rate. You're going to need more than 100 people searching to see some viability here. I'm sure you've experienced some of the similar stuff at AdStage. So what you do, okay? So now you put the word enterprise SEO. We use this like a seed term. So this is where the beauty of SEO comes in and having a deep background in both, okay? So we put enterprise SEO into SEMrush. Then we look at the phrase match report. All the phrases, all the long tail stuff associated with enterprise SEO. We then export all of that. We find all the keywords that are obviously negatives. Okay, so enterprise SEO manager, tool, software, platform, dashboard. We go down the list. Then what we do is we run a broad match modify. But then what we're gonna do is we're gonna layer two things into it. We're gonna layer an audience into that, and we're gonna do an in-market audience, people looking for SEO or SEM services. Okay. So now what we're gonna do is we're gonna try to find that persona, and then we can use smart bidding or any type of bid, other types of bid structure. And so we're gonna use this like broad match modified campaign with pre-built negatives based off of our research that essentially immediately allows me to do what I call personified search. Because see, anyone searching for enterprise SEO is much more likely to be in my persona, but there's not enough people who explicitly know that an enterprise SEO agency exists. So how do you grow market share? You simply position yourself for enterprise SEO, and now I'm showing up for enterprise SEO audit, enterprise SEO strategy, enterprise SEO campaigns, how to do enterprise SEO, all these different things that allow my brand to be positioned when I think that my ideal persona is explicitly looking for something related to the services I sell, which essentially allows me to deepen my target market share around my persona, not just explicitly around personified keywords.
Right. Yeah, I like how you use the negatives to protect the broad match from going too crazy by using like SEO data from SEMrush. And also the in-market, I think a lot of marketers are kind of afraid to use the in-market segments because, you know, there's a trust that the
quality
is good.
Well, GDN, it sucks.
GDN right. sucks. So what I kind of ran an experiment to prove it, right? So I built out a lookalike audience, and I mapped everyone from GDN back to LinkedIn to see how much what my match rate was. And it was like 1% across all GDN. It was horrific. So GDN itself, not great, but if you use the in-market audience on search, you can kind of create this capturing bubble on it, and then you can be more successful.
Right. So do you, if you get a new client, do you say, hey, I want to run this as an experiment, or I want to shift most of your budget to this? Like, how do you approach implementing something like that?
You ever been to an old house and you turn the faucet really slow and it makes that noise?
Yeah, they're like shaking.
Yeah, you got to do it like that. You have to do it just like that. You got to turn that faucet on really slow. I think one of the biggest mistakes people make in PPC, and that we've made at Directive in the past, is not being good enough at risk management. Trust is critical in the consulting engagement. It's critical. And one of the easiest ways to blow it is to think you know more than the person who's been doing it in-house. It's the dumbest thing you can do as a consultant is think you're smart. The dumbest thing you can do is think you're smart as a consultant. Right. You have to come in humbly, and you have to come in asking a lot of questions, learning their business, and then you have to do your recommendations slowly. I think one of the biggest mistakes I made in my career when I got started was I knew the answer, I thought, and the faster I did it, I thought the quicker I'd get returns. And the truth is you don't usually know. Like, now I know when I do a marketing campaign, it's going to fail. My question is, how much can I learn from it so that the next one maybe gets closer?
Right.
Okay, so I never expect anything I do to work, anything, no matter how smart or thought out I think it is. I always expect it to fail, and I have a process to make sure I learn from the failure. And then I try to do it a lot slower because it sure as hell doesn't help to speed it up, especially right. when you're consulting. Now, for myself, I can move a little faster. But taking someone's account and then rebuilding their ad groups and then launching with yours right. is the most asinine, silly thing you can do because you didn't hedge any of your risk. Instead, what you do is you say, okay, let's allocate. We're going to do alpha, beta, right? We're going to treat your campaigns like alpha. We're going to treat ours like beta. And we're going to slowly allocate spend into beta to see if it outperforms alpha. And by the time we do that, we're going to have enough trust, enough buy-in that I can pitch you some cool stuff that I really wanted to do from the start.
Right.
And now you feel confident enough to actually move it up the chain and I can get approval and we can do this. That's how you're supposed to do consulting. No one tells you that when you start. So.
Right. Well, and you said you have a methodology or a process to make sure you learn from campaigns, which, you know, I totally agree with as a product manager building software. People always think you have all the answers, right? Should we put the, you know, should the flow go this way or that way? Where should we put the feature? Should we build this? Should we not? And it's the same thing. If you have the attitude like, oh, I know all the right answers, do this, you know, you fall on your face so many times. And then, you know, when you're younger, you probably try to hide it or blame other people or, you know, make excuses.
Yes.
Yeah, well, the client's an idiot or, you know, their product sucks.
They don't
or,
know. Yeah, it's something like that. No, it's usually because you made a mistake as a consultant. Yeah.
And it's at the end of the day, once you acknowledge the fact that you'll probably get it wrong, it's actually more rare that you get it right, especially if there's a lot of complexity and challenge in what you're doing. Then, and you get everybody on board with it. I'm sure you do this with clients too. I mean, if you make it about, it's not me versus you, it's both of us trying to win at this game, and there's a good chance we lose. But if we learn from the loss, then the next thing we do will be better. And of course, we're going to look at our like batting average, and if we're batting zero, then yeah, you probably want to fire me as a product guy or as an agency.
Well, exactly. And the key here is structure, right? So we operate on what's called like quarterly business reviews, right? When I first started, everything was a weekly sprint. I was a big weekly sprint guy.
Right.
How much can I get done this week? And then we're going to report on that impact. And what you eventually learn is you run around like a dog without a leash going all across the trail and really headed nowhere at all because you don't have any direction. You don't have any longevity to what you're doing. You've never picked your head up and actually stared down into the distance and be like, oh, that's where I'm going. And so what we try to do now is, you know, quarterly business strategies, monthly data analysis, and then bi-weekly reporting.
Right.
So 2 times a month, we do what we did. We talk about what we did, the inputs. Once a month, we look at the output. And once a quarter, we reevaluate the strategy to make sure we hit our annual goals.
Great.
And so when you put yourself in that structure.
Sorry, I'm just thinking. So 2 weeks inputs, 4 weeks outputs, so you show them some data, and then you check in quarterly and say, okay, here was the objective for the quarter.
6 years later, that's where I got to.
Right. Well, I want to ask you two things. One, I do want to know, how do you make sure you learn along the way, and how do you, like, do you write? Do you give feedback? Like, how do you make sure you do that? Because in product and engineering, there's this concept of doing a retro, right? So after a project, you do what's called a retro, and usually you ask, okay, what did we do right? What did we do wrong? And what would we do differently? And it's great in theory, but no one ever does them. So you have to literally have someone on your team that's like, we have to do the retro, put it on the calendar, force you to sit in a room, everybody wants to cancel and reschedule. And then you have to get over all the people who are grumpy about doing it and be like, hey.
And then the one person whose idea was and it failed and now they're pissed and then they're blaming and it turns into this little finger pointing game and then nobody gets better, right? No. Right. So how do you reassess? Well, you have to first clearly state what you're going to try to accomplish. A lot of people don't do that, as simple as it sounds. A lot of people don't actually say what they're trying to do. It's a lot easier to fail if you never said what success looked like.
Right.
And or it's a lot easier to like get away with failing. Like most people, like you have to actually put your ass on the line if you say, here's what we're going to try to accomplish this quarter.
Right.
No quarterly targets means no quarterly misses.
Right.
So a lot of people do that. It's a nice little job security tactic that people kind of go with. It doesn't actually help them advance their career, but sometimes it helps them keep a job and the company stays ineffective, right? And so one of the first things you want to do is say, what are we trying to accomplish? And then decide how long it's going to take you to accomplish that. And then actually check back in, but keep the length long enough that you're not always checking back in. So like in other words, like I can't just launch a campaign this week and then try to evaluate if it worked next. And so just knowing that, and we just try to do it quarterly and monthly to get hints, right? Hey, is it really going that way? What's the CPA trending? What's impression share trending at? What's cost per conversion trending at? Whatever that is. But no, I think you really, if you can keep it on a quarterly basis, it really works. Like we do it across all of our accounts. We do quarterly business reviews across every account here.
Right. That's great. Then, so yeah, monthly, what are you giving them monthly? And since we do a lot of reporting, I'm also curious, like tactically, what do you show them? What tool do you use? How do you communicate it to them?
Yeah. So a lot of what we're doing monthly right now is still like in platform native, because essentially like we used to try to do dashboards. The problem with real-time data, if you get out of native integrations, is it breaks. In other words, if you try to show like opportunities by channel in real time, it's a nightmare. Like it's just an absolute nightmare to get real time data for opportunities in a report by channel.
Right. So I'm not judging. Yeah. I'm not judging. Directing the platform makes total sense.
So we'll stay in the platform and do mostly screenshots, and it's like a Google Doc type experience. What I found is everybody wants a dashboard, but everybody needs reports. And so, in other words, like no matter how well people try to do their dashboard to tell a story, if it's not their work, they don't understand the data. In other words, like if you're servicing a client and they're looking at a dashboard, it's really hard to tell the story. And so we do reports on that. And then we do our quarterly stuff, and our annual stuff is actually in Data Studio, and it's beautiful and it's fully integrated.
Sorry to interrupt, just on the monthly side. So you put it into like a Google Doc, which is actually pretty brilliant because, to your point, you know, a lot of marketers don't take time to create a narrative around their reporting, right? It's like, here's a bunch of charts, and then their narrative is like, this number went up.
Yeah, we don't do automated reporting here because the accounts are too large and the POCs are incredibly trusting of us, and they usually don't have deep expertise in what we do, and they need to report vertically. You know, they have important jobs. Like the way I tell my team is like, you're servicing our point of contact and then you're servicing the account. And if you really align yourself with the person that signed your contract or vouched for you, it's a lot easier to retain them. It's a lot easier to get buy-in at the organization. It's a lot easier to actually influence change. And so we report really, really well to whoever our point of contact is so that they look great internally and that we get buy-in and that they understand fully what we're doing.
Right. Yeah, and I like the idea of a Google Doc. Not that I'm selling Domo, but Domo did something interesting in their reporting. Well, they'd call it a business intelligence tool. Yeah. Is they like integrated communication. So they tried to make it where like if you're looking at a pie chart, you can kind of start.
Report card, like, and try to do something similar.
Chat.
A lot of people have tried to do it. It's difficult. It really is. It's difficult because what if you want to drag and drop a screenshot? What if you want to, like, it just gets a little nasty. Like we've tried a lot of different things. Like we have pretty decent like engineering here and to like do our own ETL, like pipeline management and stuff like that. And we have a full enterprise system with Sisense, with full client dashboarding and everything else. And we're moving away from it to reports because the client at the end of the day wants a freaking report. And they, in the sales process, they say they want a dashboard.
Right.
when Q2 comes around, they want a report.
And like, so what is that, like a PDF report or that Word doc that you
just... It's a PDF. It's a live Google doc. So it's literally right. Like we'll have a client who's been with us and we'll have like 600 pages of reports. It's like a log file of right. Everything we've done for their business. Because we remember I told you we manage all our inputs biweekly. So every 2 weeks we have a report of everything we did, why we did it, and what we're doing next. So I call it what we did, why we did it, and what's next.
Right.
And then once a month we say what happened.
So there's a lot of writing, so it makes
sense. Yeah, no, it's a lot of writing here, exactly. It's a lot of reporting, because anytime you're paying someone a lot of money to do something and they don't work for you, you want to know what the hell they did with the money. Like, it's really simple. Like, I paid you for time. What'd you do with your time?
Totally fair. You said before, we call it demand gen, but it's really lead gen, and I didn't have time to think it through.
It's so true, though.
But you're right.
Yeah.
Why do we call it demand gen? Because we pretend that we can create demand?
None of us can create demand. Unless you're at Salesforce, like, I don't even know if they can create demand, in all honesty. So, no. I mean, nobody can create demand. That's such BS.
Right.
We don't have the budget for it.
Maybe consumer. You probably need an audience so gigantic that, you know, like, what are those? They just went out of business. This is not a good example.
Yeah, isn't that a good example, right?
there's a few consumer brands. There were the Jumpers, the Man Jumpers or something. Like, Rompers. That's what it was. Romper. It was some ridiculous clothing trend.
I guess my point here is, like, the reason why generating demand is so problematic is because, in my opinion, the marketing funnel, leads are a wasteland. I have the belief that if you cut out lead generation, you could make a lot more money, especially in enterprise. Now, I understand, like, self-onboarding and those kinds of stuff. But anything that requires a demo or a proposal, leads are incredibly expensive if you do a CAC to LTV model across the board for literally every client we've ever worked with.
Right.
It's very expensive for them to turn a lead into a customer. What you can do instead is drive awareness at the top of the funnel and then capture them really well at the bottom through positioning, eliminate the middle, cut spend, increase opportunities, deals, and revenue, and then grow your CAC to LTV ratio.
So you would go spend that money on improving the onboard experience and then top funnel, like brand building and awareness building?
Not like this. Okay, so I do SEO for performance, like for software companies, at PPC for software companies, right? I do search marketing for software. There's 60,000 people in software as marketers, okay? For $2,000 a month, I can get 600,000 impressions, 10 impressions per person on LinkedIn on that audience. Okay, if I do this for an extended period of time, every person in software, ideally my ideal customer persona, will have heard of Directive. Then, when they search SEO agency, when they search PPC agency, when they search marketing agency, when they search digital marketing agency, when they search anything I offer, my goal is to show up as many times as possible when there's purchase intent with my brand. That means every review site, that means organic, that means Google Ads, that means through a guest post. So writing on search engine land, marketing land, for a keyword I can't rank for on my website, but I know that they search. So like what I'll do is I'll go write, I have an editorial column, right? So I'll go on Search Engine Journal and I'll write the 20 questions you need to ask before hiring a performance marketing agency, and I'll rank number one in 2 weeks. Now what I've done is I'm controlling the narrative of what people are looking for when hiring a performance marketing agency, and then I'm satisfying that narrative through my positioning of what exactly I offer. And so now all of a sudden I'm generating quote unquote demand, which is really leads, because I have top of funnel awareness on my ideal customer persona, and I have bottom of funnel positioning when there's intent. I cut out the middle, which is lead gen, like, so I was converting at 65% running single persona campaigns on LinkedIn with lead gen forms, and I couldn't turn them into customers because there was no purchase intent and it was too expensive.
Right.
When you get away from that and you say, I'm going to generate awareness and then I'm going to capture demand, you can be really, really successful with a small
spend. I like it. Really interesting. Well, we're running out of time with you, so I do want to say, tell me about Directive too. I meant to ask you a bunch of questions about it, and then I just got super engaged in the conversation. But you guys are where? How big are you? I mean, I think we have a good understanding what you offer, but give me the 30 seconds on what Directive's all about.
Yeah, we have like satellite offices around the world, two core offices, one in Austin, one in Orange County, 50 people, mid-market enterprise software companies, B2B and B2C, some enterprise companies, like we've done Cisco, Samsung, Allstate, stuff like that, but mostly software. And yeah, we do SEO, PPC, and I think we take a radically different approach to just impacting your business at the end of the day. Like,
seeing the channels and less about how many links I built you and more about how many organic opportunities I got for you and why.
And what keyword do you need to rank for that we need to stuff into the title of the podcast?
Ooh, that's good. Yeah, no, let's go after performance marketing for software. You do it, Paul. That'd be great.
Okay, there you go. So, well, I want to thank you for coming on to talk about performance marketing for software companies, B2B SaaS.
Oh, man, anytime.
It's been a pleasure. I learned a lot. And you know, considering we share a stack, I feel like we're connected in a very specific way.
Yeah.
It was a pleasure meeting you.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks for coming on.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to today's interview. This is our second interview in our interview series. If you'd like to learn more about what's going on in marketing, you could always head over to blog.adsage.io and sign up for the newsletter. And if you know anyone that should be on the show, just go ahead and tweet at AdStage or myself, Wikipedia. It's like Wikipedia, but with my name, Wicker. Get it? Over on Twitter. All right, enjoy your week.